Well, good morning. I don't know. I'm going to try to do this quick, and that's fine. But it's going to be a little longer, so why don't we stand and sing 435? Diane, if you'll lead us in that. Sing the first, or the four verses, and then the chorus after. Speaking of Bibles, I've always been amazed that I see a lot of repos where the people get buildings and can't pay for them and trash them up, tear them up, and then the haulers bring them back in and we get the repair order to go out and fix them. And they're usually pretty bad. Some of them aren't, but a lot of them are pretty bad. They're trashed up. But you know, it's been amazing to me how many of those, actually, I think about all of them when I go in there. Amid all the pill bottles and clothes and all the other garbage, there's usually a Bible laying. Sometimes I found more than one Bible in them. It's amazing to me that, you know, it just seems so out of place in there. But yeah. all right. So Mark asked me to do little topic here on God, and I just wrote these questions. I don't know if you can read these, and I just tried to think. I hope I'm kind of in line with what he had in mind. But is there a God? Who is God? Where did God come from? What will be the end of God? And those aren't. I'm not asking those questions in a doubting way. We all know what the answers are. But as he said, it's good to look at these things. Some of these things. I was thinking this morning when Philip was sharing about, and I can't quote the verse where it says where the heart that trembles at his word. And I was thinking about something I'd read one time about the Jews. They lost the pronunciation for Jehovah, Yahweh, or something like that, Jehovah, because they hardly ever mentioned the name. It was such a serious thing to mention the name of Jehovah, that they lost the pronunciation of it. And even now, the Orthodox Jews would only say it with the deepest reverence. And as I was just thinking about that trembling at his word, you know, the word we need to take it serious when God says something. I'm not going to make much application this morning. It's mostly just going to be looking at some things you all know. A lot of you will probably have better verses than I will, but I thought that this would be a fairly simple task to pick out some verses, but the problem is the whole Bible is about God. It's just really hard. But so I have these four questions. We're going over them briefly. I'm going to, here in the beginning, I'm going to just try to go over, just branch out just a little bit. You know, how can you prove there's a God? Well, we'll get into that just a little later. But so everybody here, imagine, I know for a fact that if I came up and asked you if you believe in God, you would say yes. So everybody believes in God. Everybody believes that there is only one God. Everybody believes that God created the universe in 6 days. I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about the world. Everybody believes that God sent His only begotten Son into the world. So the question is, if we already believe all these things, what's the purpose of talking about Him? Well, here's something I've found in my life, and I imagine in yours, is that we can believe a lot of things, or say we believe a lot of things, but not stop to ponder why we believe them. You know, where they come from. And just for instance, so Mark was talking about a flat earth, but we grew up, from my earliest memories, I knew the world was round. I just picked it up through whatever. You know, somebody, I guess, when I was young said the earth was round. I believed it. And I never took the time to figure out why I believed the earth was round. It was just round because somebody told me it was. And oftentimes we can be that way with things we believe about the Bible. We just heard them. So when it comes to the point where somebody says, well, why you believe this, you don't really know. You know, why do I believe it? Well, I've just been told. And that's a good thing. It's not bad to believe God because you've always heard it, because it's been preached. But another example is Santa Claus. There's a lot of young children that believe in Santa Claus. And the reason is they've always been told that. Now, sooner or later, their parents know it's not true. And sooner or later, they'll find it out too. But they just believe it because they've been told it. So I want to look at some of those things about God here. So what we use to prove that there is a God. Is God a reality in your life? Or is it just part of your religion? Is the fact that there is a God, is that a reality in your life that affects what you do? You know, there's a funny thing. When I was growing up, we did some things that were strange to a lot of people. And I don't remember the specific question they asked me, but somebody asked me one time why we do what we do. And I just said I was trying to think what it was. But I just said something that made absolutely no sense to them because it wasn't a valid reason. And I forget what it was. I remember one time, this is kind of funny, but I can remember one time when we were out in a construction job, and at the time I worked for Mennonite, he had a steel-wheeled tractor. And I remember being out there, and somebody asked him why he had steel wheels in his tractor. And he said, and I'm not making fun, it's just kind of funny, because you'll get into these situations like that if you don't know why you do things. But he just said, so we don't get flat tires. Well, that's not the reason, but you know, and so anyway, it's just things like that. The other thing it's good to know why we believe the things we do is, I remember, and I want to be careful why I say this, because I know there's some of you here that know who I'm talking about. And again, I don't want to do it in any way that, you know, it's critical, but I just want to use this to show the importance of knowing why we believe what we do. There was an instance, and I can't get this whole thing together, but where there was in our private schools, we always had outhouses. We didn't have indoor toilets. And I guess I believe that the law would require that we do. I'm not sure about all that. But anyway, in this certain case, there was a hearing before a judge, I believe, or a school board. I forget the whole thing. But anyway, whatever it was, There were questions asked. There was accountability brought to the school why they didn't have indoor bathrooms. And the comment was made by the one man there that was defending the school that they didn't believe in him. And whoever was doing the questioning asked him if they had them in their homes. And, well, there he was. He just said they don't believe him, and yet they have him in their homes. So there was no thought there as to why they were doing what they were doing. So it's important that we know why. I just want to start out with some of this. Is God just knowledge in your head? Do you obey God simply because you're afraid of him or hell? We heard Friday morning about fear of God. Rehoboam, Laverne read out of Chronicles there, 2 Chronicles, where Rehoboam had lifted himself up against God, and God sent the prophet to him and said he was going to send the king of Egypt, and he was going to destroy the kingdom of Israel there, and or it probably would have just been the two tribes by that point. But it says that he humbled himself. Well, if you look at that word humbled, basically what it means, he surrendered. He knew that God was mightier than he was, and he knew that God would bring this judgment on it. So he didn't fear God in the sense that he sought him. He feared God because he knew what God would do. So we can obey God out of fear. It says later on in that very chapter, it says that he did evil all the days of his life because he didn't set his heart to seek the Lord or something like that. He feared God simply because he was afraid of him. He didn't amend his ways. The other thing about just having knowledge. I know in the 1700s when John Wesley came on the scene there in England, the church was full. I think the church was fairly large at the time. It was mostly well-educated, rich, wealthy people who had, I believe, I don't know this, but I believe they had a lot of knowledge of God. But there was no reality in their life. Wesley realized that people had to change from within. It had to be a reality within first before it would make a difference in the outside. So, how will you convince others that you truly believe in God? I'm kind of premature because we're just going to go to that question later. Is there a God? But how will you convince others that you truly believe in God? A spiritually dead person who's a Christian name only, he can be very fervent about God. He can say a lot of things about God. He can be as eloquent or maybe even more so than the most ardent follower of God. And it's something I've noticed that I've talked to some people that I could tell by their lives that they were going into the world. And it was amazing to me how much more spiritual their talk became. I don't know more spiritual, but it's very spiritual. But it was a lot of things, you know, it was a lot of spiritual things. It was healings, it was just what God's been doing here and what God's been doing there, but in their life there was not the reality. So how will you show others that you truly believe in God when you say you believe in God? James says, "Yea, man may say, thou hast faith and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works." So basically what James is saying, he's saying that I have faith. Or James isn't saying it, but he's saying this man is saying, I have faith and you have works. And he's saying, James is saying, so show me your faith without your works. So how are you going to convince me if I'm not a believer? How are you going to convince me that you believe in God? You know, however eloquent you may speak of God, how are you going to convince me of it? He goes on to say, I will show you my faith by my works. That's how you show you believe in God. Thou believest that there is one God, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. So if we believe in God as we say we do, It has to be more than just knowledge. It has to be more than just words. All right, so let's get to this question. Got to hurry on here. Is there a God? How will you prove there's a God? Well, that we know that without faith it is impossible to please God. But how will you even prove God? Before you get to the part where you have faith in God, how will you even prove there is a God? Well, really our only source is the Bible. So without faith, without an open mind, without the drawing of the Spirit, it's going to be hard to convince somebody. There are, however, some things I think that we can look at. And I don't, you know, I feel almost up here like, I don't feel like I'm blaspheming, but I almost feel like it doesn't feel right to almost make this thing like I'm questioning if there is a God, because I'm not. But there's a lot of people that don't believe in God. There's a lot of people that believe in evolution. They believe that billions of years ago there was a bang, and Big Bang, and that out of this whole thing something evolved and it kept on going to at some point. I don't know the time frames here. Some of you would probably know this, but somehow life began in the oceans and crawled out of there and became landform, and somehow along the way there was something that this side of the family went to the monkeys and this side of the family went to the humans, and they never found that missing link. But anyway, that's in short the theory of evolution. But the Bible says in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and that's what we believe. But everyone who tries to argue away God as the creator suddenly finds himself in a very impossible situation. Because now he has to try to explain the universe as an accident. And I don't know, I've never tried to do that, but there are plenty of people that have tried it. And there's several reasons I think why people believe it, but one reason is that people never stop to think about it. Because if you start thinking about it, if you start digging just a little bit, just as simple as a tree. Well, where does a tree come from? A seed, which comes from a tree, which comes from the seed, or the chicken and the egg, which came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, very soon you begin to run into problems. It would be easier to believe this if matter had already been here, if there had already been atoms, other things made out. But there was that. So we have to start with nothing, right? If it was an accident, it had to start with nothing. So taking God away forces us to come up with some solution to explain where even those basic building blocks come from. And people limit God. I think one reason people don't believe in God is because our finite minds cannot understand eternity past or eternity future. And I think because of that, people simply think it's not possible. We have to have everything where we can figure it out. So people limit God. I believe that's one reason they'll believe in evolution. There's many other reasons. One reason people don't believe in God is because that makes them responsible to obey God. So here I've got a few verses in the Bible. Again, if somebody doesn't believe in the Bible, then it's going to be hard to convince them. But Psalms 90 verse 2 says, "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hadst formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God." So he was God from everlasting to everlasting. And we don't know. And later on, I'll do a very poor job explaining those last two questions there. But he was from everlasting to everlasting. We believe that. Hebrews 7:3 says, it's talking about Melchizedek. It says, "Without father and without mother, no beginning of days nor end of life." And this In a sense, you could say the same thing about God. There is no father, no mother, no beginning of days, nor end of life. We'll probably come back to Hebrews 7 there later on. All right. So let's, aside from the Bible, let's look at just one. There's many, 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 but there's let's just look at one scientific fact why there has to be a God. Why there's no other explanation for it. So the world orbits the sun. It goes around the sun. It makes an orbit once a year. At the same time, the earth is spinning, which gives us day and night. And at the same time, it's at an angle. So as it travels around the sun, the seasons change. Right now, we're just at the tail end of winter. We're getting into spring. And in the southern hemisphere, it's exactly opposite. So with the angle of the earth, we get our seasons. But at this moment, we're traveling in this orbit around the sun. We're traveling 66,600 miles per hour. That means since this service began, we've traveled quite a ways around the sun or in space. It takes 365 days and 6 hours, 9 minutes, and 9.54 seconds to make that orbit around the sun. And we're back where we started. Now, here's the thing. Since they, I don't know for sure who was keeping track, but since they started tracking this, that time has not varied by 1 second. And so there's no accident that I've ever seen that has that kind of precision. You know, I mean, there's no explanation for it. We all know this. I'm preaching to the choir, basically. But it's good to establish again these things. But so you have an impossible task. You have to prove there's no God involved in this precision. If you think back about a couple months ago on August 21st, when a lot of us went to see the eclipse, some of us were down in Tennessee, and we were watching this eclipse, and there was this man on up the street from us, just a little bit up the street. We were all just right along the road there. And he had a smartphone, and on this smartphone, he had a countdown, and I think didn't he have a countdown to when it was total? He did. All right, so he was counting down, and exactly when it got to zero, then, I mean, just when he said that, it was dark. It was, and by the way, that was the shortest 2-some minutes that I've ever experienced, I think. But then when it started going the other way, he counted down, I think from 30 seconds, he counted backwards to the time that we were supposed to get our glasses back on. And an exact second that he said that, the sun came out from behind the moon. And the reason I know that is because I didn't have my glasses on. But the thing is, that is how accurate that was. So it's impossible task to explain that there is no God. All right. So who is God? This, I think, is more important to us in a way. He is everlasting. We already touched on that. He is a being. It talks of him as a being in Exodus 33. I'm not going to turn to these scriptures. It take way too long. In Exodus 33, it refers to his face. That's where Moses wants to see his glory. And God says that no man can see my face and live. He also talks there about his back parts. He was a being. Who is God? He is a being. Exodus 6:6 and many, many other scriptures talk about his arm, his stretched out arm. Again, we have something that is a being. Job 35:9, he said, "Hast thou an arm like God? Or canst thou thunder with a voice like him?" Now we have a voice. He also talked with Moses in the burning bush and out of the cloud. And also he talked I was thinking of something else there and lost my train of thought. But we have people that have established in the Bible that there is secular record of, aside from the Bible, that people believe to have lived on this earth who spoke with God. So
We not only have proof that He is, now we have an idea of kind of who He is. He speaks with a voice. It speaks of His right hand in Psalms. It speaks of His right hand. It was amazing. It speaks of His left hand when it speaks of the judgment scene, but I don't know that it ever says, I don't know, I didn't search this out. It'd be kind of interesting to know if it ever speaks of His left hand in any way but judgment. I know it speaks several times about His right hand. In Exodus 24, it talks there about Moses and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu went up on the mountain there and the 70 elders, and it says they saw the feet of God. It's something like pavement under the feet of God or something like that. There it talks about His feet. David speaks of His nostrils. So again, we're getting the picture of being. All these are speaking about God. I deliberately stayed away from, even though we believe that the Father and the Son are one, I stayed away from those that are talking about Jesus. In Revelation, it talks about the Son of someone is like as to the Son of Man. It talks about His hair and... All right, so several things about Him, who He is. He is omnipotent. That word omni means simply all. It's from Latin, I think. We all know what potent means. Potent is simply strong. So He's all-powerful. I'm going to read a scripture out of Isaiah. This is a little longer, but I want to read it because it has so much. Isaiah 40, verse 12. Isaiah 40. Let me go to the right. Verse 12. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of His hand and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? Who hath directed the Spirit of the Lord, or being His counselor, hath taught Him? With whom took He counsel, and who instructed Him and taught Him in the path of judgment, and taught Him knowledge and showed to Him the way of understanding, talking about His omnipotence? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket, and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, He taketh up the isles as a very little thing. And Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beast thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before Him are as nothing, and they are counted to Him less than nothing and vanity. That doesn't sound good for the United States. To whom then will ye liken God, or what likeness will ye compare unto Him? The workman melteth a graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold, and casteth silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he hath no oblation chooses a tree that will not rot. He seeketh unto Him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. Have ye not known? Have ye not heard? Hath it not been told you from the beginning? Have ye not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is He that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, making mention to the earth being round. And the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers that stretches out the heavens as a curtain and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in. That bringeth the princes to nothing. He maketh the judges of the earth as vanity. Yea, they shall not be planted. Yea, they shall not be sown. Yea, their stock shall not take root in the earth. And He shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither. And the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. To whom then will ye liken Me, or shall I be equal? Saith the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things that bringeth out their host by number? He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of His might. For that He is strong in power, not one faileth. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, My way is hid from the Lord, and My judgment is passed over from My God? Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the Creator of the ends of the earth, fainted not, neither is weary? There is no searching of His understanding. And we'll stop there. So it just talking about His omnipotence. He's all-powerful. The nations are as a drop in the bucket. He comprehendeth the dust of the earth in a measure, and He weighs the mountains in the scale, scales and the hills in a balance. He's all-powerful. He's also omniscient. That means He knows everything. It says, the eyes of the Lord, in Proverbs, that the eyes of the Lord are in every place. And I think somewhere it says that there's nothing hidden from Him. There's more to that, but there's nothing hidden from Him. Matthew 25:34 says, Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And in the book Doctrines of the Bible, they wrote about that verse. They said, God looking ahead foresaw the fall of man, conceived the divine plan of salvation, and prepared a kingdom for the everlasting glory of His people. He is all-knowing. He saw that before the beginning of the world, what was going to happen. And He prepared it. And I know this has troubled some people. I confess that I think at one point in my life it was a little troubling to me that God already knows where I'm going to come out at. And so it can have a tendency to cause you to think, what then does it matter? But we don't believe in predestination. We believe that we have our own free will to choose. And just because God knows already what will happen doesn't mean that we're not responsible and that we don't have a free will. So if that thought bothers you, don't let it bother you. God is all-knowing because He is God. But He is not. He has given you a free will, and He has not predestined you to hell. All right, let's move on. He is omnipresent. That means He is everywhere. It says, I know that Solomon, when he prayed, he said, the heavens of heavens cannot contain you. And he makes reference to the temple. He was saying how small the temple is, because the heaven of heavens cannot contain you. I just read that here a few mornings ago, and I can't quite remember that. He says in Jeremiah, he says, let me see here. Let me go to Psalms 139. I don't want to. Some of these I wrote the reference down and probably should just skip over. 139:7. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into the heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall uphold me. He is everywhere. There is no place that we can go that He is not there. He sees everything. Let me see what Jeremiah 23 is. I should have jotted down what these are in reference to. Jeremiah 23:24. Can any hide himself in secret places that I shall not see him, saith the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, saith the Lord? So that's partly who God is. He's also, God is also, He's also righteous. That's who God is. He's holy. He is faithful. He is just. And the list could go on and on. There's many things. Another one here in Hebrews. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in His sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of Him whom we have to do. And recently, I'm not sure, I think it was Laverne Friday morning that's talking about how when somebody else shows up and I think somebody recounted a story recently, but if we're doing something, the other brother shows up, you know, that we're kind of guilty of, we're really quick to quit that. We're really conscious of that. The fact is that God is everywhere. There's nothing hid. It says all things are naked and open to the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. We should be worried much more about the Lord than we should about our brother, though it's good that we respect our brother. God is the definition of love and mercy. Without God, there are people who believe that mankind is basically good. It's born basically good. We know that's not true. We know that God is the only definition of love and mercy. That's where love and mercy came from. I don't know if definition is the right word. I think you know what I mean. But also, God hates and judges. He hates sin. It says that in Proverbs it talks about abominations. Different places talk about the abomination of the heathen. And he judges. But he has righteous judgment. I don't think there's anybody in eternity, will ever be in eternity, whether they be in hell or in heaven, who will ever accuse God of not being righteous. Here in this life, there's a lot of people that do. But that's because we don't have an understanding. Our eyes have not been opened. We have not seen the righteous judge. Omnipresent. Where did he come from? Let's go on to the next question here. Like I said, I'm going to do a really poor job of these because there's no explanation. God doesn't say God always was. And we have to receive those things with faith, by faith. There's not a thing we can point to that here's where God, if God had to be created, he wouldn't be God. This is as simple as that. The other thing I was thinking is, does your dog, you buy a dog and he lives for 10, 15 years, however long he lives. And your dog, he has no idea where you came from. He just knows you're there. He just knows you're there and you provide for him. But that's a poor comparison, but that's somewhat similar to where our minds are as compared to God's. We're really finite. My baby boy, he never crosses his mind to question where his mom came from. She was always there. Again, it just says that he had no beginning of days. Or it talks about Melchizedek, but I think the same is true for God. There's no beginning of days. He always has been and always will be. Colossians 1. Colossians 1, 16 and 17. There was a verse I wanted to read there. Talking about God, for by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in the earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things. And by him all things consist. And basically that's just saying that he always has been. So again, it's just we believe those by faith. Where will God go? Or what is the end of God? Well, there is no end to God. God is eternal. But I know as a boy, and this is something I don't know if young people face. If I was just different, I know I had a lot of struggles there. With my father passed away, and it brought a lot of insecurity into my life. And there was this thought that bothered me many nights when I would go to bed. There was this thought that bothered me. And that was, I could not conceive of eternity. Eternity was something that I could not, I still can't, but I believe it. But I could not conceive of something that just went on and on and on. And so when I think about death and I think about eternity, I would be thinking, I would just get panicked. Because it's like, there's an end to this thing somewhere. And I don't know why it's weird. I don't know if other people have experienced that, but it's like it can't go on forever. It has to stop somewhere, but it doesn't. God says it's everlasting, it's eternal. And the funny thing was, I would talk to my first cousin about this one day. He's a little older than I was, and I I told him about this because I don't know that I ever said anything to anybody else, but I told my cousin about this, and he said, you know, he said, that doesn't bother me. He said, but what bothers me is, where did God come from? And I never thought about that. You know, I just knew that God was. I just believed that God was. But it bothered him because he didn't know. So these things can bother us, but as children especially, but they don't need to. It just should be a comfort to us. Anyway, all right. So I'll go on here. I don't want to belabor this, the whole thing. Psalms, he says, for 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. He's basically saying that to God, 1,000 years are just as a watch in the night was 3 hours, I think. It's gone. Yeah, 1,000 years is, I mean, you can't even compare it to eternity because there is no comparison. In 2 Corinthians, it says, 4:18, it says, well, we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. It says, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So we haven't even seen the eternal things yet. It says that they are temporary, those things which we see. See, there was something I was going to say here, but I've forgotten now what it was. Yeah, so I have a verse here in Daniel 9. I want to read yet, and we'll close this up. Daniel 9, verse 14. Well, I don't know. I think it's 7. Here, I can't read my own writing. Yeah, here it is. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Just bring this out to what is the end? There is no end. It's an everlasting kingdom. Again, in verse 27, and the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Just talking about an everlasting kingdom. And I think I'll close with that. There was something I was wanting to say. I can't remember it. And so I think I'll just stop with that. Just the Lord bless you.